What made you guys three successful men, right? Like the kings of New York, practically, right? Why are you guys doing this?
Why the fuck would anyone leave banking to go and sell rosé?
I started with myself and with like just a few locations. Now I'm in 11 countries in 33 different states in America. We have 16, 17 people working for us, and we're in the top locations around the world.
Well, let's get started. Welcome to Business Untitled. Excited today to introduce Barry Byatt, who's the founder and CEO of Rumor Rosé. What I think is so exciting and admirable about having Barry on this is he left a career in banking, JP Morgan, and really gave it all up and pivoted to chase a passion and a dream by making like a amazing high-class rosé in Provence, France. So we're going to explore that today. We're happy to have him on. My co-stars, my guests, Mel Carter, Mike Novogratz, and of course, Barry Byatt. Welcome.
I got to start Thank with you. Just a really implicit comment that hair is rosé hair. It's not banking hair. Just saying. As a ball guy, I can say that.
And talking about banking, I think, especially for me, because Dave and Mike got way more experience in it, but I'm just starting to learn it. And I think everyone, soon as they think or hear banking, automatically finance, guy's rich or girl is rich. What an amazing career. Why the fuck would anyone leave banking to go and sell rosé, right? So can you tell us what banking really means? What's a typical day of banking? Is everyone in banking rich? Like, is everyone in finance rich? And if you, they are,
that's a why great leave question, for a company? Actually. Sometimes I question myself why I left. first of all, no. The answer is no.
No, to which one?
No, not everyone in finance or banking is rich.
Okay, you guys hear that?
But I think they want to be rich.
Yeah.
And that's what they go for. And that's one thing that I kind of didn't really like about that industry is it's money driven, right?
Yeah.
Everything is based upon assets under management, how much money you could raise, what your commissions are, what your fees are from top to bottom, right? And I think you have to have a specific personality in that field to be top 5-10%. You
yeah.
have to, right? And I was in the business for about almost 25 years, right? I was in with UBS for almost 19 years. Then my last position as a managing director was with JP Morgan for like 3 or 4 or 5 years or something like that, 3 years. And, you know, I learned the business from the ground up. And, you know, nothing was given to me. I had to earn everything I went through from day one when I got into the business from right out of college. And I saw how the industry changed throughout the years, and it's getting better. But, you know, obviously SEC has a lot to do with it, the regulators. And obviously the firm that you work for is all about the fees. And if everyone was rich, then in the industry, nobody would ever leave, right?
Yeah.
I remember, you know, we all have to get our securities, it's called a Series 7 test to pass to start.
Huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a pain. It's a pain. And I remember I was maybe 22, 21 right out of college, and I got it. And I remember one guy that was a mentor to me on my team. And as soon as I passed, he goes, well, you got the license to print money. And it was the farthest thing from it, right? So you look at the Wolf of Wall Street, that was the old, what we call banking, right?
Yeah.
And I got the tail end of it. Funny enough, I actually went on an interview in Jordan's office back in 94.
No, no. Yeah. Yeah, it was to sell penny stocks or like his?
I had no idea. I had no idea. I was working right out of college in Arizona. I went to school in Arizona, and I started working there, and I went to come back to New York. And I was working for Merrill Lynch, actually, for a couple years. And a buddy of mine turned around and said, come here and I'm going to introduce you to the best people, best everything. You're going to make the most money. And I came in the city. He picked me up in a Ferrari. He actually went to jail, too. Picked me up in a Ferrari.
Was he working with Jordan?
Yeah.
Picked he me went up to jail in that whole thing?
Yeah, yeah. He picked me up in a Ferrari. I don't know if it was a whole thing, but it was part of that. Picked me up in a Ferrari. We went down to, I think, Jersey, somewhere out, Long Island. And I'll never forget. I was 22, 23, I think.
Ferraris are cool.
College. It was Ferrari, Porsche, Ferrari in the parking lot. He goes, you know what? 3 years, you're going to be one of these. I was like, okay, great. And I go up there. As soon as I open the door, it's exactly from the scene. You got like 50, 60, 100 people in the just on these long tables, just making calls. And once again, you have to have a specific personality for that.
Bud Fox.
Yeah, exactly. So that was not for me. And I decided to go the more conservative way. And I joined UBS and I worked my way up. And
so that's the first time you dodged prison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then what did it feel like when you actually gave it up, right? Because you're there for 20 years in banking. You got J.P. Morgan.
Well, you really were a stockbroker.
Well, no, I was on different, yeah, for a while I was. It was wealth management, but I held different positions.
Right.
When I was, and I actually was a manager at UBS. I hired a lot of brokers as well, and I dealt with, and I had at the end I had an office in LA and in New York.
And so, those jobs are in some ways really entrepreneurial in themselves because you're building your own client base.
Yep.
You're using the platform.
Yep.
But you really have to be an entrepreneur.
So you had a little of that
entrepreneurial DNA.
Yeah.
And I want to just know, like, with, you know, you have J.P. Morgan on your business card, right? You're walking around with all that on your shoulders. Like, what's it like? What does it feel like when you give that up? Like that next day, you know, now you're just Barry Byatt trying to start a rosé company.
And then I want to add to that.
And yeah.
Giving it up, was it strictly woke up one day and was like, I hate this shit? Or did you wake up that was part of it and it was like, man, I have such a passion to sell rosé? Or was it, I really want to be rich and I don't think this is going to get me there? Or was it a mixture of all?
It was definitely not the rich part, 100% okay. Not. That was probably the last thing and still is the last thing on my mind, because I saw a lot of people that I managed or work with, and when that was their intention to get rich, they never got rich.
Yeah.
Or if they did, it was short term.
Yeah.
Or they ended up in jail. So when I left, well, it was kind of a series of actions that happened. I was mentally kind of out of it, right? I knew this was coming towards the end of me working for someone. I knew I did not want to work for another CEO. I had issues with my direct report, who was the CEO of the company, and it just was not looking good. And I didn't believe in a few things that we're doing, and we just, you know, we're thought about going separate ways, and we did. And I was actually I was thinking about opening up a firm or something on my own in the finance world. And I had a lot of connections. And that's the reason I actually got into the rosé business, because I think, as Dave knows, I know a lot of people out there away from the finance world. And my passion has always been into the F&B world, the hospitality world. So I had a lot of good friends in that.
And how'd you make that network?
I guess, I don't know. I just...
They're here.
Yeah. I just, being out and just being around people, and I met some really, really good people. Believe it or not, my first experience was in college. I went to University of Arizona in Tucson, Arizona, and one of my good dear friends, his name is Sam Fox, that you met, who I kind of had my first experience opening up or helping him open up a restaurant in Tucson, and I helped him with kind of the opening and a few nights over there. And he kind of taught me a little bit of the hospitality world, and we kind of learned a little bit together. And he actually went on to stay in that business and became very, very successful. And he still lives in Arizona. He just opened up a beautiful hotel called the Global Ambassador in Phoenix. So if you guys ever go there, it's unbelievable. And I kind of learned from that, and I was around that world. Even though I was in the finance world, I kept my worlds apart always. I kept my business and my friends and social life very different, very. And that's what kind of made me, I think, successful in what I'm doing now with all the contacts that I've had. It was a good base to start with, right? A lot of people start an alcohol brand with a celebrity, right, to help him give that kickstart. I chose not to take that route, and I wanted to go with my own connections and build a business over time, right? And it takes, as you guys all know, especially you, takes years, 5, 10, 20 years to build brands. And my intention, to go to your question, to answer your question, is my intention was never, let me get into this, let me flip it and make a lot of money and go on. It's actually the opposite. It's spending a lot of money, raising money, putting your own money into it, hustling, and hopefully you build a brand in the next 5, 10, 15 years.
Did your banking connections, if you said you kept it separate, right?
Yeah.
But when you were going to raise money, how much did you
zero.
Raise?
Zero. Zero.
So oh, wow. Your banking connections zero. Didn't come into that at all.
Not yet. Not yet. And
that's amazing.
This was all through really the people that I knew. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a lot of good, loyal friends that I made throughout the years. And not necessarily the raising part, but supportive of my business, you know.
Why rosé?
At the time, that's a good question. First of all, we have to take it a little back. I started a business in 2019. I left the banking world in end of November 2018, early December 2018. And in 2017, I had a few of my friends got together, and they wanted to create a rosé company. And then I had another friend of mine at the same time wanted to do another rosé company separately. And they all came to me. And they're like, hey, we know you know a lot of people. Why don't you get involved? And I'm saying, listen, I'm in the banking business. I'm not at all have any interest. And I kind of saw them from afar. Unfortunately, they couldn't get anywhere with it. They couldn't launch it. They couldn't get anything done. And then I was in Mexico at the end of the year in 2018. And I came across people that I've known for a while, and they're actually involved in my business now. But I start talking about different businesses that I want to go into. And one guy next to me goes, Barry, whatever you do, count me in. I'll give you up to $2 million right away, which kind of gives you a little bit of a confidence right then.
Sure.
And then. He didn't. I never even asked for it, but it was a confidence that kind of started me with that. And from there, I kind of said, you know what, let me go and revisit, because it wasn't as saturated as right now. 4 or 5 years ago, it was still picking up, but it was still the same,
Don't
I would
not.
Say. Yeah, a few big brands that we have heard for the last 10, 15 years. And I wanted to kind of make something more relevant, cooler, elegant, tasteful. And I had no idea about the wine business. I still don't, but I learned a lot. So I decided to really, I went down to Provence to find winemaker that I wanted to make the wine with, and also interview some vineyards to work with as well. And I just started learning the business then. It's not easy. Definitely, definitely not easy. Right now, we're seeing a lot more activity in the area.
How did you get your way into places like Soho House, Chiltern Firehouse, Hotel, Eden Rock, effectively?
Yeah, because those are actually big places that a lot of companies just can't even like.
Right.
And did they treat you kind of like dirt at first, or was it just like right off the get go you got in there, or what was it like to?
These are two major questions, because I started on my own, 100%. I had no help. 2019, I literally designed a bottle that you see. I designed a label, designed everything about it. And it's all made in France. And I literally got my hat and my backpack. Mm-hmm. And a funny story was, I wanted to start in Mykonos. Mykonos at the time was probably the hottest place on earth, right? And ironically, before that, I knew the founders of Scorpios, a good friend of mine, Thomas and Mario. And I saw Thomas And I told him, and this is the biggest guy in the world when it comes to F&B, right? Yeah. They do an enormous amount of business in Mykonos. And everybody was going there from Europe and America. And
including us.
Including you guys. And I remember it was probably, I don't know, March, February of 2019. And I told him I'm doing this. And he said to me, you know, Barry, whatever you want, you're on the menu, we'll take care of you. And that by itself gave me an enormous amount of confidence that a guy that who I respect in the business and who's accomplished a lot, has the biggest F&B venue probably in the world, gave me that confidence to say, hey, I'm going to accept you in my place. So
you built off of that.
I built my confidence built off of that, right? Uh-huh. And then I decided to start in Mykonos first because, once again, I didn't even know about distribution, what it was and what it means in America practically, right? First time, like, I'm like, okay, I'll just tell all my friends you got to carry my rumor and that's it. And it wasn't like that. So when I went there, we decided the wine, we celebrated in Provence, and it was in March. And then I wanted to go and pitch it to all the people in Mykonos, including Scorpios and all the other owners that I knew or somebody knew that connect me. And I remember I said, okay, can you send me like 30 bottles to Mykonos? This was 3 weeks before I was flying there. And they're like, yeah, no problem. We'll send it to you. You'll probably get there in like 2 months. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, Mykonos is not easy to get to. I'm like, all right, let me redirect. I'm like, can you send it to my friend in like London? Like, sure. And I was lucky because Brexit wasn't really in effect then. Now it's impossible because of Brexit. You can't send stuff from Europe or vice versa easily. So I had to go to my friend's house. He got it in there. Big boxes came in there. I landed. I got excited because I saw these boxes to take for tastings. I opened up the box. And I'm telling you, I saw this bottle with no label, no foil, nothing. Just a bottle with a cork and juice in it. And that's all I had. So just to give you an idea, and that's what I had. Nothing. And I'm like, so I said, I have no other choice. Took it, put it all in my suitcase. I had two big suitcases. I put them in there and flew to Mykonos. I literally did very well. People, I tried to explain to them what it looked like, what the label looked like and the bottle, finished bottle looked like. And they started saying yes. They tasted it. They liked it. And that's how we started.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Mike, what do you got to say?
It's the hair. Ball guy does that. He's got no shot.
So it was in that whole journey in 2019. I started, my first sale was actually in Mykonos, and I went to Alamegu, and Andres is another friend of mine who owns that place, who's been nothing but great and supportive. And then from there, I just started really hustling. That's all it was. And to answer your original question, to my transition was from banking into selling wine. I always say the power of the business card, right? Mm-hmm. When you have a strong business card, you're managing director of any big bank or anything, it opens a lot of doors. Mm-hmm. A lot of calls get picked up, a lot of everything is being catered to you. Once you lose that, right, and you go on the other side, it's not like that. That was the biggest challenge. It's a very humbling experience, right? And especially as you get older in life, like it's you know, you get mistreated, you get disrespected. The people that were kind of kissing your ass coming into the doors to spend money now making you wait for 2 hours just to say, you know, no, I don't want it, right? These are, you know, really humbling experiences.
Yeah, because before that, you would have walked in, you would have been a client, they would have treated you like gold, and now all of a sudden you're sitting in the waiting room for an hour and a half seeing if you can get an appointment with this guy.
Though the one thing I would say is, the part of Wall Street you started on, right, the broker side, really, that's a tenacious job. That's a hustle job. Yeah, that's a knocking on doors job. Right. It's getting rejected and going back at a job. Right. And so there's some echo.
That's been my personality all this time. Like, I don't give up. Like, even right now when I'm, you know, even right now, like, I have a long way to go, right? I'm about 4.5 years in, and I have a long way to go on building a brand. I'm not giving up. And I get knocked down every day. Every day.
Where have you succeeded so far?
When you say succeeded, well, now.
So you're Mykonos, you're all over.
I mean, now, you know, I started with myself and with like just a few locations. Now I'm in 11 countries in 33 different states in America. We have 16, 17 people working for us. And we're in the top locations around the world, from, you know, Greece to Italy. We're doing very well. And if you ever go to Capri or Sardinia or Milan, Lake Como, anywhere you go, you'll probably see Rumor on there.
You do well with rich people.
Rich people like our Rumor. I guess that's what it is, right?
So you started 2019, right?
Right.
First, late or early?
It was mid, because I decided late in our business, right? Starting in January is late.
When did you leave banking?
In December of 2018. Like, I had a month off.
So a month off, fresh.
Right.
Go to Mykonos, got your first sale.
Yeah,
things
is June.
Clicking,
yeah.
Feeling great. 2020 hit, the world shut down. No job.
It was probably...
What did that feel like? Because we had no fucking
crazy.
Clue.
I look back and like, it was crazy what I did, because I don't know what got into me. It was like, I had these blinders on, and I put myself in a position, Mel, that I couldn't afford to go back or turn around.
Yeah.
I was deep in this ocean, and I had no other way to go but just to swim. And
the ocean froze up.
Yeah, and what happened is, and I remember this, everybody was in survival mode, right? Everyone starting in February, March, deep, everybody was survival mode. I was not in survival mode. I was in growth mode. I was like, fuck this. I'm not stopping. I don't know if it was lucky or not. I was one of the first people that I know and all my friends knew that got COVID.
Wow.
Because I was coming in from Milan for work.
Oh, yeah, that the big Italy breakout.
And it was towards the end of Feb and beginning of March, and I landed in New York, and I couldn't taste or smell. I call my doctor, my ENT. I'm like, Doc, I know this is a bad time, but I think I got a sinus infection. He goes, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't taste or smell. He's like, how do you feel? I'm like, I feel great, but I can't. He's like, come on in. I'm like, all right. And I go down, and he's... They're in hazmat suits. They don't want me to go up.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like.
But then you use that as an advantage, basically.
So, I got COVID, and I remember I really wanted to grow, but I didn't know what was going to happen. And I remember my winemaker at the time goes, Barry, grapes don't get COVID. They're still growing. We can't stop. You know, that's how it is. I'm like, that's a good point, but. I brought down production a little bit because I was worried. And ironically, I also started our half bottles, which is a 375 millimeter with a twist off, because I thought that no one could touch anything and everybody's got to open up their own stuff to drink.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. But that kind of turned out to be better for our mini bars and all the hotels.
You and Mel would have got along.
Yeah. And then what happened is when people around me were in survival mode, I decided to fight. I don't remember who said this, and I was watching this show somewhere about sharks. And I remember there was a photographer that's all he did. He just shot sharks, and he's never had an issue except once. And a shark was coming around him. Sorry, it was coming around him, and he was in attack mode. And he goes, the only thing I did was to look at the shark in the eye and just kind of punch his nose. And he went away. And it kind of stuck to my head, because he said, that's the only way I could have survived, to look at him in the eye and be more aggressive. And that's exactly what I did during COVID. I flew, I remember.
How much did you fly?
I had COVID from I couldn't do anything for a month and a half practically, right? So I started flying in May of 2020, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
From May 2020 to October 2021, I took 100 flights.
Damn.
And these are not, these are hard flights. And I had to go through fucking hell to get on these flights. And I did whatever I had to do to get in front of everyone, to show that I was committed, to show that I was serious, that I want to make sure our product is getting attention that it needs. And that's all I did. And I started hiring then, too, because people were kind of desperate, and I thought, this is the opportunity to pick up good people, and that's exactly what I did. And that's how we went forward. Mm-hmm. And in our world, you're as strong as your distributor is, right? Because you can't sell this without a distributor in whatever city it is. And I use that to my benefit with my connections. I went to places like Eden Rock, right? Eden Rock is a good story. It was June of 2019. He gave me, the general manager met me in New York, and I told him the whole story in April. And he's like, come by and see me, sure.
I'm going to give context to, like, Eden Rock is probably one of the most famous hotels on the Riviera, yeah. if not the most right. famous, right?
Right, right.
You know, place.
Yeah, I would say yeah. it's an iconic place yeah, in the world. There's nothing better on it. And yeah. A gentleman named Philippe Perd, which I respect a lot, he met me in New York, and I went and I saw him in June of 2020. And he's like, I'll give you 5 minutes. And I sat with him 45 minutes. He had all the Psalms around, and he loved it. They loved the story, and they decided to carry it, and that's how it went. And that's exactly what I did with every location, from London to Paris to Saint-Tropez. Yeah. And, you know, Saint-Tropez is not an easy place. It's still not an easy place.
It's really like guerrilla marketing, right? Because you had no marketing budget to speak of, right? It's just basically putting yourself out there.
What's the, like, you got... You know, domain art, like, what's the landscape? Who are you trying to, you know, wedge into?
Well, listen, the biggest guy, the biggest company right now, and I respect him a lot, it's Sasha Lachine, who started Whisper Angel. I never met him, but they compared me to him, which I think was respectful. They're the biggest, right? And LVMH just recently bought them, another respected brand.
How long has Whisper Angel been around?
16, 17 years. And... and then
feels like five.
Minuti, which I respect a lot, and I know the owners. I met with them, with Francois Maton, and he's a super nice guy, and they do a very good job with their products. LVMH also bought them, and I would say they're at the top, right? There's a lot of little ones around.
So I'm just wrong on the. Why do I think Domain Art was?
Domain Art, they really did well for a while, you know, but I think. It's a great product, right? All these, I think all of them are great products, right? It's just what energy you put behind them, right? Yeah.
And
that's interesting. It's such a marketing story.
What distinguishes your product, like in your, do you approach that?
It's really, it's me and my hard work, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, the product is great as you tasted it.
Yeah.
It's organic, it's vegan, and we don't use any additive sugars. And I always wanted to build, to make a rosé wine that was clear, pale, tasteful, and it was meant for drinking for everyone, right?
Was rosé like a thing? Like that was like
a thing? Yeah, it was always that because I'm not a big drinker. I don't like alcohol that much, but I don't like wine. And this is an alcohol that you could actually drink without even knowing you're drinking.
Yeah,
like Mike is right now. So.
Wine light.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the summer.
If you put it up, it's light. It's a light color.
Yeah. But you can sit around and drink a whole bunch of rosé during the day.
Right.
So how do you approach that, like? Brand like taste profile product, was it just marketing?
I got into it without knowing, and this was my first project, right? I took all my experiences from my old business. I learned and saw what people did well and they didn't, and I took all that experience and tried to put it on this, and I made mistakes, and everybody does, and I'm sure I will going forward. But I realized one thing that was consistent with everything that I saw that was successful. A, the product had to be good. Second, you have to work. You have to work hard to get your product in front of people's faces, and it's one door at a time, one venue at a time, one person at a time. And it's always been like that with me, right? And that was goes back to what you and I spoke about with my whole career. It just never give up. You know, one door closes, there's five other doors next door, right, you go to. And that's what I did.
You knocked off some of the great European summer places.
Right.
What's left on the map? Do you got the U.S. done yet?
Then at the same time, during COVID, it was a little bit tough. I concentrated on Europe. And I used Europe as my really selling point for America, right? Because a lot of Americans like to see what we're doing in Europe. And then I came across and hired a couple of good people that had more knowledge about distribution in this field than I did, and we started getting distributors throughout the whole country. Now we have 30 states. We're working on three other states. And then we have, you know, obviously from Mexico all the way to Europe. We're working on the Asian countries right now, South Korea, Japan, Turkey, huge. I'm sure you guys will end up going to Turkey soon or this next year. Bodrum is really on fire right now. And then Morocco. And then the big fish, I would say, is UAE, Dubai. Dubai is huge, huge. And we should be getting in there soon.
Mel's going to go to Turkey to get his hair done.
Yeah.
Mike went in and failed.
And they like the name Rumor, right? It's synonymous with mystery or something. They don't know what it is, but it's pronounced the same way around the world, right?
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and it's something that, and for me, I'm building the brand, right?
We're the biggest per capita rosé drinkers.
Actually, UK, if you think about it, UK drinks and Belgium, believe it or not. Belgium is up there, yeah.
Why did I think it would be France?
France, listen, France is number one, but they produce a lot of wine as well. Yeah. Not necessarily rosé, but they produce a lot of red as well. But I would say...
This is the kind of wine you drink, Mel.
Yeah.
It's like wine light.
It's really light, yeah.
I don't drink.
I know, but if you would. If you were going to drink, you'd start with rosé. Not dessert wine.
Yeah, it's drinkable. As you drink it, it gets even better. And but listen, at the end of the day, it's really my hard work at the beginning, right? And I had one guy that gave me another bit of confidence. A friend, I think you know him as well, Jamie Rubin, who him and his family owned a lot of venues around the world. And he really, without even me asking, he just gave me every tool that I need to be successful. He introduced me to a lot of his friends that have venues or his place and really helped me as well. And big supporter right off the bat. I have to give him respect for that.
So you're a likable guy. Those skills came in handy when you were on Wall Street in banking, right? And I'm sure they still
actually
come
not that much over there.
No?
Not as much because over there, it's a shrewd business.
So has it come into play more now? And are there times when you have to like check that and then start to like get hard with people because you're running this company now? You're not just selling shit.
Yeah,
you're like,
no, I'm definitely, you know, people who work for me, they know I'm passionate. This is my baby. Mm-hmm. I don't fuck around, right? I sleep, breathe, I do everything because of Rumor. That's all I do, right? And I take it seriously and I take my business very seriously. So, and I have accountability to my investors. I have accountability to myself and to my team. So I take it seriously.
Beware the man with the Buddha face and the scorpion heart.
So yes, being kind, yeah, it people, you know, you're probably one of the most humble people I've ever met. And I think being humble and carrying stuff around, for me, I could, like I did today in the middle of zero temperatures, carrying bottles around to meeting some of the most sophisticated people in the world. I just roll up my sleeves and work.
So is it the same skill set or have you had to learn different things now that you're on your own entrepreneur?
Listen, I learned a lot on my own, and I think all of us in this room, I think you guys are all have your own success stories, but there's certain things that are intuitive, right? You pick up yourself and you see it. You see between right and wrong. And it brings up all your experiences from the past.
It sounds like you've broken through like the sound barrier. Like when you're investing in businesses, we do a lot of startup investing. There's a point where you're like, oh, they broke through the sound barrier. Now this business is just going to scale.
Yeah.
How fast it scales, where it scales to, we're not sure.
Right.
But it's a business. It's going to be around.
Right. 100%.
Sounds like you've gotten to that point.
Right.
And so now.
In a short amount of time. Right.
Which is awesome. So congrats.
Thank you.
And so now, like, what's the next chapter?
Well, scaling and more, right? Being that, you know, you could never rest. And I could say this with any business, even though this is the only business I've been involved with right now. But I think you just can't stop. And
so scaling the rosé brand, right. it's not new brands, right. It's not new, you know.
It makes me think about Amazon and what Jeff did. And Amazon, I don't know, 25 years ago was an online bookstore.
Yeah, shocking.
Now they're running our lives, every inch of it practically, right? From the internet to what we buy.
The cloud.
So I think there's room, and I'm working on a few things that I think that will be interesting under the Rumor brand. We started our white wine this year. It's called Rumor White. Tasteful. I could open it as well. You could taste it.
Why did you do that? Why did you do that?
Just to bring a little balance to our portfolio. I think our, you know, 90% of our sales and our focus is on the rosé still, mm-hmm. right? But I want to bring a little. It's very hard to make. It takes much longer, and it's in jars for many more months than mm-hmm. it is for the rosé. So
this is a question, technical question, because I've been told both things. One of my buddies at the said, you got to finish the rosé that summer. It's not going to last to the next summer.
Right.
So my son has a big rosé party at the end of the year, and all the extra rosé gets drunk by all his young friends. I don't know if that's just a myth, or is that true?
You know, it's a snobby way of thinking about it, in my opinion, right? Rosé, our rosé, just because of the grapes we use, lasts about a good 3 or 4 years, right? The cheaper ones usually don't last as much, but you are right. Traditionally and now, restaurants, especially in Europe, they always want the newest one, even though it's not the best, because rosé needs to age a little bit to kind of mature a little bit.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it needs to mature. Like right now, the first sip you took was not as good as the sip right now, just because it matures, it opens up. I personally like 1 year older, but I can't dictate what people want to buy, and that's our challenge. Our challenge is that, exactly that, right? We produce and we sell, and if they don't sell, but there's always places I want to buy. There's smart people out there that venues I want to buy 1 year older, right?
But what's your biggest regret in terms of like this business? Like, you know, what would, if there's one thing you could have done differently from when you left banking throughout this journey, and I know you've had some successes, but what do you think is the biggest mistake you made or the biggest regret you have?
Besides dealing with the French? I would have understood the distribution model a lot better before getting into it than I did, but knowing that, I don't know if I would have even started and gone forward with it if I knew it. I literally just put the blinders on and I went. I think you saw me. I was a one-man show running around with a backpack with ice packs in it, trying to go into tastings, right? Which I still do that once in a while. But if I knew, I don't know if I would have been here and been successful as I am right now. And luckily, I have a good team that has been nothing but supportive, and we're doing very well with it, and people like it. So that's probably the most important part.
Yeah. How many times have you been knocked off the horse where you just was like, even for a moment, was like, not that you don't want to get back up, but fuck, I don't know if I could get back up from this.
Yeah. And what was the worst? Yeah, what was the worst story for that?
Great question, actually. I've been many times driving down these roads in France, and I'm like driving 3 hours in middle. People think, oh, my God, you have the best job.
Driving while not drinking rosé.
That's the last thing I was thinking. I was just trying to sell it before I drink it. But, you know, there are times that I remember I documented every practically step of the way.
Oh, yeah, he was telling us about that.
Yeah, I documented. I took probably selfies with whoever I came across with. And I think there was a couple of videos I've taken. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I was, like, so down because just getting turned down, like just getting knocked off on my ass. And I just said, you know what? I'm done. And somehow, some way, you just wake up the next day and you're like, let's go at it again.
Let me step back for a second. You grew up where?
Well, my parents are immigrated to America. I was also immigrated. I'm Iranian. I'm Persian. And I grew up, we were very young when we left Iran. And the revolution happened, and actually it was very tough for my family because it separated my whole family. They kind of kept my father hostage. My mother took me and my sister out, and we went to England first. And then my uncles were already here many years before that in New York, and somehow we made our way into New York and then went to California. So I kind of grew up in California for a while. It was tough. Really tough time when I was growing up because we had to go to public school and all that, which I kind of, looking back, I'm very happy about.
You were in a Shaw of Beverly Hills.
Definitely not. I was not, no.
Dave and I went to Tehran in 2006.
No,
2006.
10.
No way.
10. Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad Mousavi.
It was like
10.
Because we, it was like 9 or 10.
Oh, wow.
2009,
yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
I had no idea. Camp. Why?
Yeah. We were wrestlers. Oh. There's a huge wrestling culture in Iran.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went to take the U.S. wrestling team on this tournament called the Takhti Cup.
Right.
George Takhti was a great
Did you
Iranian
have a chance
wrestler.
To view and...
Yeah.
We spent a ton of time drinking tea and smoking hookah. Like, we, because we had guards, right. Like, they were nice kids that were our guards. We couldn't really go underground. And so we just saw... But it was so interesting. Everyone there liked Americans. We thought they were going to dislike us. They loved us.
I think the country is probably one of the most beautiful countries in the world. And, you know, if you look at the country, it has a lot of natural resources and really kind people. And going back to your point of traveling and getting to know people, that was one thing that Rumor did, that I really went to a lot of these different cultures to get to know them. Mm-hmm. Because we see things, you know, we hear things here, right, from the internet, Instagram, or TV. But once you get in there and see the culture, it's a whole different world. And how they treat you with a bottle of rosé sometimes is different too, right? And I didn't speak every single language, every place that we do business with. I don't speak their languages, right? And that's why I came out with Taste Has No Language. Mm-hmm. And I trademarked that for my company because I think that's what we stand for. Taste has no language in anything, right?
You were born in Persia? In Iran?
Yeah.
In Iran?
Yeah. Wow.
You speak Farsi?
Yeah, I speak fluent. Yeah.
Do you think, like, coming from somewhere other than the United States has given you a better understanding and ability to, like, integrate into different cultures?
Because you're
in 13 different countries.
100%. Yeah. I definitely adapt, right? And you could put me in any situation, I'll adapt and make something out of it, get myself out of it or make something out of it. So 100% it helped. And I think... what was that movie? Something about there was a talk show about becoming a millionaire. The Indian kid.
Yeah, Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire.
That's a good movie.
That really, honestly, if you look at him, he was not a smart, educated kid. He won because of his experiences in life, right? He just won because of his experience. And I think we all win because of our experiences in our life.
What country was that based in again?
India.
Yeah, Patel.
Right.
Mike said on our last podcast, said that Indians are the highest, they make the most money from immigrants in America.
I bet the Persians are up there as well.
You left the Persians out, and Persians
are doing I was picking a few examples of people, but the Indian Americans are the highest.
America is a country of immigrants, right? If you look at from Steve Jobs to, I think maybe even Jeff Bezos' parents were immigrants.
Yeah.
Everybody, it's a country of immigrants. We all, at one point or another, if you go back into our history, we all had some type of, that's how America was made. So I think, yes, to answer your question, that helped me with Rumor a lot. It helped me with a lot of different groups of friends that I have, right? Mm-hmm. I have a lot of different supporters from around the world.
Well, let's lift the glass that one day we'll be drinking Rumor in Tehran.
Oh, wow.
It up. What if somebody's, like, leaving a career, right? They've been there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, banking or anything other, and they want to chase a passion like this. Like, I don't know, what would be some advice you'd give them, like, based on your experience? Like, what would you say for any consumer brand or some sort of dream you wanted to chase?
Well, I would definitely say study and understand what takes to be successful, what are the ingredients is out there. And secondly, you got to work hard. There's no way around
it's a common thread of this podcast.
Every single podcast.
Every single podcast.
And I say it.
Grinders.
It's the hustle world. I think you and I spoke about it throughout the years. It's like, it's just hustling. And that's what it is. And I know you had Harvey Spiewak here, who's a dear friend of mine who I respect a lot. And he was telling me his story. And it was always a hustle.
Yeah, he was a grinder.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you look at, like, for instance, you had Eugene Rem here, right? He was one of my dearest friends, and him and his partner, one of my closest friends, Mark and Eugene, and they built
grinders.
Something. Yeah. I don't think not that many people can right now. There's no way. And they have obviously been nothing but supportive to me as well. But, you know, I have another good friend.
Shout out to Eugene and Mark.
Yeah. They're definitely solid people, solid. I have a lot of respect for both of them. They've definitely accomplished something that everyone tries to do in the, in the world. But another person who became good friends of mine is Jimmy Johns from the Jimmy Johns. Yeah.
Mike knows Jimmy John.
I just celebrated his 60th birthday, and this man, I mean, you want to talk about his story. Crazy. I would love to have him in this. You should.
We got to get him on the podcast. Paul Jones is a good friend. Yeah. We're going to get him on the podcast.
I talked to him on a regular basis. He's been nothing but supportive. I actually met him through Sam Fox 20 years ago, and his story is, he's giving me a lot of inspiration. A lot of inspiration.
So hustle and grind is number one. What's number two?
I think being authentic, being true, being who you are, and accepting your good and bad, right? A lot of times, everybody's like, I don't want to do this because I can't. Well, fine. What can you do? And let's focus on that, right? And I try to do that with my employees every day. Like, I don't like people coming to me and say, there's a problem. Well, what's the solution for it, right? We want to find a solution for what we could do.
Who's like the legends in this space? And this is a two-part question. Who's like, who do you look up to in this space? Like, man, not man if I could get my company, because I believe you will.
You ever met Mr. Jack Daniels?
That's a good question. I'm lucky enough to be friends with Mike Melman, who started Casamigos, and one of his partners, JJ, who I love and adore, both of them. And, you know, I learned how he did it. And he actually, when he first started a business, he called me up to actually ask me to connect him to Sam Fox, who had all these restaurants in Arizona. And I saw the way he did it. Now, he had a lot more tools at his disposal when he started. He had George Clooney, Randy Gerber, and this
Clooney helps. He still doesn't let Mike on his golf course.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No, so, he does after Mike calls him two or three times.
We could arrange that if you want.
A lot of famous people, but, man. Mike got, you know.
But he's, you know, look at Casamigos, what they've done now.
Yeah.
If you go anywhere, you have to have Casamigos in your part of your, you know, bar. It's asked for. There's nothing you can do about it. I think that's a good one. I look at my brand not as a necessarily an alcohol brand. I look at it as a brand, right?
I mean, the name is just crazy.
You got to look at it. If you look at all the major brands in the world, Louis Vuitton, what do you think about Louis Vuitton, right? Is it purses? No. Is it clothing? Is it shoes?
Culture.
It's Mel's whole wardrobe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right?
Is it Mel's wardrobe?
Yeah.
So I think this rumor has, you know, we're in the first. I won't open up this too, by the way.
I can't let this waste.
I got to open up the white before we finish here as well for you to enjoy. But I think, you know, we're just, you know, in the first inning of rumor right now, in my opinion. We're just starting.
You ever had a celebrity spokesperson? The only rumor I can think of is Rumor Willis. Any other rumors?
I don't know.
Well, Adele sings a song, you know, pretty
Adele
famous. Yeah.
Adele with a glass of rosé out there singing.
Right. Nowadays, the celebrity market, I would say, with brands, it's out of control, man. It's really out of control.
And is it working still or no?
Listen, I don't think it's because people are not stupid anymore, right? You can't just suddenly just wake up one day and say, okay, I'm a famous actor or a celebrity or Instagram model or whatever and say, I have a brand now. Please drink this too, right? You have to work on it. Now, Mark Wahlberg, who's a friend of mine, who really works his brand, right? His tequila brand is doing well, and I respect him for that. He works hard, right? Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, I don't know him, but I know he works hard. But overall, I always said, and I think I had this discussion with you once, that you got to give up everything in life and believe in what you're doing and put 100% of your energy into the product or whatever you want to do. If it's acting, that's what you're doing. If you look at all the actors, that's all they do. Now, on the side, if they want to do hustle, it's fine. You could invest. But you guys are investors, right? You guys invest in people like me, for example, right? To be your workhorse. Yeah. Otherwise, you three cannot start a brand. There's no way without having someone lead it. Yeah. You have to have a leader. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's after many years, right, of just focusing nonstop on what we were doing. Now we get to a place where it's like, okay, you can put some other chips in some other spots.
Correct.
But when you're starting something,
build a company, you got to give 70
hours. To build a company,
you know,
absolutely.
I tell you, something reminds me of. Throughout the years, everybody would call me and say, Barry, what's good? What should I invest in? I got some money. What should I invest in? And my response was, what do you do? What do you do for a living? Invest in that, because that's what you're going to make your successful.
I tell you what I'm going to invest in, air conditioning for this damn room. It's hot. I thought Bitcoin was going high.
Literally, it's 6 degrees outside. But that's what I said. Focus on yourself. And that's exactly what I did, by the way.
Yeah.
I left because, and I said to myself, I have two choices, to work for other people and have clients or to be somebody's client. And that's our goal.
Barry, question for you. This is Mel's question, but I'm going to steal it this time. You get a superpower. You can't pick Thor because I already picked him.
Got to steal Mel's question?
No, no.
No, go ahead.
It's not my question. It's just a Business Untitled question.
All right. All for one, one for all. We're like the Wonder Twins. You get to pick a superpower. Any one. What would it be? Not what you already have, what
I
you
think,
want.
I think if I had a superpower to pick right now, it would be to heal people from their wounds.
Boom.
That's
I like
what I
that.
Would do. 100%. I would like to.
Nobody heal, said that.
Heal people.
Everyone said something selfish
to,
like
all,
grow hair.
No, to identify problems and heal them. I think
the
that's,
healer. I like that.
I think if we could, I try to.
We should
I
trademark
said,
that. Otherwise, by you damn freaking, you know, the Marvel's going to have the healer pretty soon.
I think if we all, I always said, whoever crosses my path in my ability, right, in my position, whatever, if I could touch and help someone with anything, right, that's, you know, that's the key. And I think at the end, I think that's how, that's success for me.
I love my, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another question, back to your last, well, that was just a job, but career job. When you was in that banking space, can you name three people who was so legendary that it was like, I could be like that one day?
Not in the banking world.
That was a great answer. Because Mike seems to think he's one of them.
Whatever niche you're in, you know, like, you know, if you want to be in and stay in it.
I thought he would have said Mike Novogratz.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Finance. If you're talking about development, you say Dave Barry. Talking about music, you might say Mel Carter.
Well, the three of us might, but I'm not sure the rest of the world would.
I
did you ever hear about Mike Novogratz right now?
I've known his name and throughout with
from
with,
Dave Barry, though, right?
I think he's a legend in himself. So I think it's his. I think you guys are all three legends here. So I respect that. I'm not putting that industry down. I look at people not about what they've, how much money they have in their bank account, because that doesn't make a difference at the end of the day. It's what they've. They represent, and who, if they're kind, and who they helped out. How many people did you make successful?
He's a kind guy. So, I give him that. So, you're a watch guy.
Yeah.
This is
a
really, really, really nice watch.
I appreciate it.
That's fact, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why we ran into Jenny the other night.
Yeah. So, would you call yourself a collector?
Yeah, 100%. I would say I've been collecting throughout, I would say, the last 20, 25 years. Jenny,
that's
is,
a special, special
right?
watch.
Let me see the watch.
Let's get a close up on the watch. It's a special watch.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know your watches. Yeah,
I'm a watch guy.
Yeah. No, it's a Patek. I've been collecting Pateks and APs. Jenny, you had her on a show, I think.
She's good.
She's amazing. She's one
she's
woman.
Amazing. Shout out to Jenny.
Yeah, she's definitely one woman out there that I have a lot of respect for. One thing I even told her the other night is, you know, she keeps her word. And in this industry,
definitely does.
She keeps her word, and I respect people like that. She had to endure some challenges when she got into AP, and then now she's done very well, and I'm very proud of her. And female CEO. Mm-hmm. Another one is Lisa Jones, actually, who's the president of Patek Philippe, and who I know and respect. It's actually her birthday today. And she's another strong female leader out there, mm-hmm. that in the watch industry. And I've been collecting these for, it's a passion hobby of mine for many years. I understand them pretty well.
Yeah. I need an Innit Patek.
Huh?
Every Patek I have, I bought like on 47th
right.
Street.
Well, we'll try to help you out with that.
Boom.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
You should get a couple of these. But you should definitely get Jimmy John's in here if you can.
I'm calling my buddy to get Jimmy John's.
I mean, I talked to him.
Mike's got like 80 calls out.
Martha Stewart is coming on next week.
Oh, is she?
No, he's been saying this for 3 months.
You should get Sam Fox in here too. I think
we should.
I think these guys are
people got busy schedules.
Jimmy's,
we'll be here.
Jimmy's personality.
I don't think you know Martha. We've been asking. No connection.
Jimmy's personality is something else. He takes over the room. I just celebrated his ironically about him quickly, but he celebrated his 60th birthday in Arizona. He had Chris Stapleton play for us nicely. And his wife, Leslie, who was a lovely woman, she had her 50th a couple months ago, and he had Elton John play for her. And he's probably one of the most dynamic, big heart, big energy people I've ever met in my life. And I actually learned from him because he took his business from nothing to a multi-billion dollar business from nothing.
Yeah.
And I speak to his employees and they all love him. And I learned a lot from that. You know, I learned to kind of take this little business into a bigger space. But I think they'll be good as well. Right. And
this is some of the fun questions that I like to know and everybody else like to know. One, were you born poor, middle class, or rich?
I would say middle class. I wasn't born poor, but there was definitely a very good amount of duration of my life that we were closer to poor, yeah, and then middle class.
Let me just be in a, because you weren't really an immigrant, you were a refugee
kind
in
of,
a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That's just trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen, the tougher situation.
Did your dad ever make it?
Yeah. We're good. Like they're in California right now. They go back and forth. Nobody's political. Nobody's that. They just had to pay the price for whatever. And they're hard workers. My dad was an accountant, and he's still, knock on wood, alive. And I was lucky enough to have nice parents, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, that was my wealth, right? That was probably the biggest wealth I had, that I had two kind human beings in my life that helped me grow.
No, a lot of people don't. I mean, we all look at it that way, but to say it out loud is different because my mom was my wealth. And my parents, Dave's parents, like, that is a good way to look at it.
That's important. I think that's the basis of who we all are, right, at the end of the day. And I don't fuck with people who are not kind. I think kindness at the end of the day it won't hurt you, right? It won't. And I think there's a lot of I was lucky enough with a lot of our friends that you know that were kind, you know. Mark and Eugene, kind people, like, you know, Jamie Rubin, kind person, you know. I mean, like, all these people were always been kind to me. So I have a lot of giving to do in the future because a lot of people gave me good throughout the years. So
And when did you, what age were you when you made your first $1 million, and what was your biggest purchase ever in life?
Well, I'll tell you.
I hope you're going to tell me.
I was 15 or 16 years old.
When you made $1 million?
Let me finish. I was 15 or 16 years old. I was in high school. I had two jobs. Worked at a shoe store, and I worked at a teller in Wells Fargo. And I'll never forget the night that I picked up my check, and I went to the bank, and I had $3,500 in my bank account, which I earned myself back then. That was my first million. That was the best feeling that I ever had. That was like me getting $1 billion at the time. So that was mine. That was my story. And that's the best feeling. I to this day, to be honest with you, I've lost, I still remember that feeling. That was probably one of the best feelings I ever had, because for me at that age, that was $1 million check.
I like that.
That's mine. So
you remember what you spent it on?
Yeah. I bought a used Toyota Celica.
No way.
For $3,400, I remember. And I turned 16, and I bought that, and that was my goal, and I did it. And I kept it in such good shape that 2 years later, right before I went to college, I sold it middle of the night, and my parents were very upset because I was going on the street and dealing with somebody random giving me, he bought it from me 2 years later for for $3,200.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you kept that million.
I kept a million, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. All and right. that was it. That was it. So,
well, so. We've heard some great lessons, right? Grit, networking, likability. You've given, you know, humility, kindness, all these things. But always at the end, we ask for what we call our ounce of gold. So ounce of gold is what you'd like to leave our listeners with as the best piece of advice that you can leave them with.
Do we have the gold?
I do.
All right. Usually
you want to steal that too.
I'm not, but he usually gives the gold. He usually gives the gold first. Then the guy actually gives it a little digs deeper.
All right.
Bit of advice. Well,
wait. That's your ounce of gold.
Oh, wow. Thank
there
you.
It is. All right.
You know, in
made by Patek Philippe.
Wow. No.
Iranian,
Mike, how much
Iranian
is that ounce
culture,
worth?
This is what they do. This is what they gift, by the way. Yeah. A lot. It's worth a lot. Wow. And my ounce of gold, I always said, stop it or it will stop you. And you could replace it with anything.
I like that.
Right?
That's a t-shirt.
If it's good or bad.
Could be a clip, viral clip.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop and we it. All know what it is, right? At the end of the day. You know, whatever you're doing, you think it's bad. Stop it. Or eventually it will
stop
you.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. It's going to plague me tonight. I don't want to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, well, thank you.
But I want to thank you all, by the way, for actually having me on here.
Thank you, man.
And I want to, you know, you've had a lot of successful people, a lot of interesting people, and for me to be a part of that, it's really an honor for me to be here. And I know I'm in the first inning of my story, so I really want to thank you guys all. You guys have great energy as well, and. Thank you.
Well, there was
thank
a you. Rumor that yeah, you were going to be on here, and then you ended up on here.
The rumors are true. True. Yeah. The rumors are true. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, man.
Cheers again.
I got to put some water in this or something. I feel bad not drinking.
No, water is bad luck.
Yeah, cheers. It's bad. You don't mix water with rosé.
You know what I got to get for you? Here's my ounce of gold.
Yeah.
Take it.
I've had enough.
No. You have
I'm
one more.
I'm sick as a dog.
It's actually really cool. Really cool. Yeah.
Where? Yeah. We're going to get our first sponsor, some guy called. He runs a big gold.
Can I ask you guys a question before you guys go? Yeah. All right?
Yeah.
Is it still filming?
Yeah.
No. Okay,
yeah,
that's fine.
Right.
That's fine.
Yeah.
What made you guys three successful men, right? Like the kings of New York, practically, right? You guys are really the kings, honestly, in your own way. You are, because I've been hearing about you guys for a long time. Why are you guys doing this?
I like that kings of New York thing.
No, why are we doing this?
Man, to be kind, for one, I was blessed to, you know, come into the orbit of Dave and Mike and a lot of other people, but I'm closest to Dave and Mike. And just being from the hood, growing up extremely poor, I heard Mike say something one day, and he was like, man, our kids, the knowledge they get from being at that dinner table is priceless. And he was saying that while I was sitting at the dinner table. I can't remember if Dave was there, but I was at Mike's house, and I was just like, damn, that is so true. The knowledge I've gotten being at dinners with Mike and Dave for so long and the opportunities I got from being at dinners with Mike and Dave, or even Bojangles, me buying all those stores literally was a conversation on Mike's plane with a random guy at the time who was a random guy to me at the time who Mike had invested in. It's like, what's after music? And I was like, oh, I got this company we just bought called Bojangles. And I was like, fuck, I always wanted to own a franchise. That would sound, and you know, that's, and you know this from being in this circle,
right?
That business happens with friends and it happens throughout conversations. And I just wanted, I always bring, you know, friends from the hood or take them to the hood at times to meet people and just like, yo, talk, meet. I love that, just connecting them. I was like, I can't bring 70 people to Mike's house a week, or I can't bring 100 people to Dave's house a week. And I sat with them and I was like, look, why don't we do this podcast and give people knowledge and let them into our dinners and into our conversations and bring people like yourselves. And because they're kind, they just was like, that's a great fucking idea. Let's do it.
And you know, there's a For everything you give, you get something back.
Yeah.
Mike.
For everything you give, you get something back, right? Like, the original intent was, okay, can we give financial advice to people that don't get enough of it? That was kind of the broad idea. But for us, you know, each person who sits in that seat, we get to know them. We get to be buddies with them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, even my old partner, Wes Edens, that was one of the best conversations I had with us. I was, that was the guy's partner for 15 years, you know, meeting Ginny, you know, now you're buddies. And right. so for us, it's a way of expanding our network, a lot of joy involved. Right. And also, great stories.
Yeah. And like, we love each other. So we have this conversation.
Mike bought us love bracelets.
He did. Mine's getting fixed. Mine's still in the shop. But we love each other. We had these conversations so many times. Anyway, so it's just like, it's so fun to have an organized have interesting people doing cool shit, you know, meeting new people, sharing that, and then just really like catching up with each other.
And sorry to cut you, but Dave said something to me, and I think he was just talking, and a lot of times we don't realize that we pick up on things as you're talking in these rooms. Right. Like, I always think about the Tesla story. That's not what I'm about to say, but they were shorting Tesla for a while, and I pulled up in Mike's driver, and it was like four Teslas there, and I've been talking about Teslas, shorting Teslas, and where it's going to go. And I was like, man... Just randomly, I'm just thinking, I don't know anything about trading. And I was just like, you know, for some guys who like think Tesla's gonna fucking fall, you sure have a lot of Teslas. And I didn't find out till 2 years later that from me making that comment, Dave went the very next morning
I covered all my short.
And so
I was like, Dave, right.
Dave said something to me one time and it stuck with me and I remember it and I will let it stick with me forever. And he was like, you could do good for profit. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. And that profit doesn't just necessarily mean money. It means what Mike just said. That's our profit, right? Our profit is getting to know you, getting to know Ginny, you know, him having a great convo with Wes. Like, we enjoy this just as much as the listeners, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I feel like we are doing some good and we are getting tremendous profit out of it. And it doesn't necessarily mean money. It means, man, I got to know you now. Now I got the AP connection.
Listen to me. You know what? If you listen to what I've said, I mean, I didn't start this business for the money and I definitely didn't want to end it with the money. So it has nothing to do with that, right? For me, it's to build something that I could pass on for people to be proud to be working for or be in a situation like this to help one person out there listening to this to help them grow, right? The reason I even asked you guys that is because I know Dave more than you guys do, and I'm glad that I met you guys. But
even being in finance for 15 years, didn't know.
Well, no, I heard. I mean,
don't take it back.
Let him finish.
Hearing about someone is different than knowing them.
I'm just fucking with him. It's my thing to do every show.
Knowing successful people to take their time, and we're meeting on a Sunday afternoon and, you know, football afternoon, and taking your time in this hot room to sit down and
listen, fucking 80s.
And listen to my bullshit story, right? Going
which
over and over, which is great.
Story.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, you hear this a lot and you have a lot more. I respect that because I think people like yourselves that are giving back is a lot to give this, right? To someone like me that has a whole career ahead. I think it's a lot, and I think I respect that a lot from you guys. You guys should be proud of yourself because I think what you guys are started right now, it's not because of the money, right? No. It is not because a lot of people go into it for the wrong reasons. Yeah. I think you guys are this is an honor, and hopefully in a few years from now, we'll come back with a bigger story with you guys.
So, we're going to get the Nebuchadnezzar.
I have that, but I couldn't bring it.
Awesome.
Man,
thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.